Kia ora, this program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio, make your voice heard.
FM. This is Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. My name is Dan, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm the chairperson for today. So, we'll open the meeting as we always do with the Serenity Prayer. So, if the people in the studio would like to join me with the Serenity Prayer, that'd be great. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Okay, we normally start AA meetings with the preamble, so I've misplaced the preamble at the moment, so what I'll try and do is remember the preamble, so you guys can help me out if I get it wrong. So what I remember of it is Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. And that's it. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. Alcoholics Anonymous is not allied with any set denomination, politics, or organisation. Does not do something else. do you remember what it is? Does not engage in any controversy. I think that's it. Yeah. And our primary purpose is to strive to help other alcoholics to recover from alcoholism. I think that's pretty much it. we worked it out. So it's great to welcome everyone who's listening. So as I said, my name's Dan. I'm an alcoholic and chairperson for today. Now we've got this is Bulls and Bears term. So we've got the group in the studio here today. So what we normally do is go around the room and share our experience, strength and hope with each other. What we'll do is I'll start off with Liz, if you want to start your sharing, Liz. Thanks.
Thanks, Dan. Hello, everybody. My name is Liz and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Liz.
And it's good to be able to come to another AA meeting and share my message. What it was like, what happened and what it was like, what it's like now is generally how I do my share. So I grew up in a family where I now understand was affected by the disease of alcoholism. And what I grew up in was something that I accepted as normal. Everyone drank and drank a lot, and whatever we did was done with a lot of drinking. So as a kid growing up in that, when I got to an age where I was allowed to have drinks, I felt the first time I felt the effects of alcohol, I remember thinking, this is why they do it, and all of a sudden it was like I could almost like have a big sigh of relief, like everything all of a sudden made sense. Life felt good and I felt like I fitted, and I remember that night like it was yesterday. I was about 13 or 14 and I was at a party at my older brother's house, and I had three big tumblers of port wine and it was yum. And it just warmed me up and made me feel all good. And so that was the beginning, and I didn't know that reaction was different to normal people, because I remember that at that party I had a friend there who didn't have that effect, and she was looking at me strangely as though, what's going on? At the time I just, you know, left her behind. I was on this new journey. And that was the beginning. And I remember I wanted to do that again. That first night I didn't drink too much, so I didn't get drunk, I didn't get sick, I didn't behave badly, so it was all good. And I thought, wow, this is amazing, and so I want to do this again. And so the next time I remember, and I don't know if it was the very next time I drank, but the next time I remember that there was alcohol that I could get a hold of, I stole the alcohol, and I stole lots of the same sort of drink, was port wine, and I drank, God, I probably drank about half a flagon. And I got really drunk, really sick, throwing up. And no one else was drunk. And, you know, it wasn't a party this time, and I was in a lot of trouble. And everyone was going, what the hell's going on with this, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, then I got a lot of, you know, I was in a lot of trouble. And that turned into almost like embarrassment. I was deeply ashamed of what I did. And I think I was more deeply ashamed of the fact that I got sick rather than the fact that I stole alcohol and got drunk. You know, and it was almost like, God, you've got to learn to handle your booze kind of thing, you know, in my family. And so I then proceeded to learn how to handle my booze. And so I vowed and said I was never going to do that again. And so, you know, I might have changed drinks. And so but I could just go on and on and on with scenarios like that. I can't remember much about growing up those years. It was to hang out with people that you could get alcohol from. And so this is in my teen years, and this is back in the day where the drinking age was 20, so it was hard to get booze. But I used to hang out with older kids, and I'd always manage to get it because I'm pretty devious. I was, well, still am, I guess. And so I could get the drink. And so I carried on that journey. And I didn't realize at the time that I'd kind of maybe it was kind of a deviation from where I was going in terms of now that I found alcohol. And so what had happened was now the type of people that I wanted to hang out with were more like drinking and into drinking and drugs and that sort of thing, rather than possibly if I hadn't have been alcoholic and picked up that first drink and taken that path. So fast forward, I fast forward a few years, I'm in my sort of mid-20s, I've, you know, managed to get myself a university degree, I'm living in a big city now, I'm living in Wellington, and I am, you know, got a good job, you know, so I'm bright, I'm pretty resourceful, and yet it's the same stuff going on, I'm drinking, you know, at every opportunity, not every day I don't think at this point, but whenever I drank, it was, I never quite knew what was going to happen. I might have one or two, or I would just go all out and just go till I dropped and, you know, fell over, passed out, vomited, did something ridiculous. And then, of course, you know, I've got a life, you know, I've got responsibilities. So that life started to become a bit tricky. And, you know, I always say that I got into a career where, you know, there were other, you know, big drinking career, but I think we alcoholics tend to find those wherever we are, whatever we do, that, you know, so I don't think my chosen career was any different, but I found the big drinkers, and I used to think when at my work, everyone drank like me, but I actually don't know that they did. They probably tried to keep up, and I possibly was able to hide a little amongst the herd. But, you know, as I was getting older, it was getting more and more noticeable. And so, you know, I would leave jobs before I, you know, I'd just get out and move on and change. And, you know, at one point I remember having a meltdown and thinking, well, this is, you know, I need to change careers. So I had a bit of a career change. You know, it talks about it in Alcoholics Anonymous. We do geographicals. I did geographicals in terms of careers. I did geographicals in terms of friends. You know, if it was, you know, I think it was the relationship or the friends I was hanging out with, this is why I'm having all these problems, so I would change, but I'd always take me with me. And so I rattled along through my 20s. I met a guy who was to become my husband and the father of my children, and I thought, this is it, I'm settled down now and it's all good. And I did settle a little bit. I didn't drink when I was pregnant and all that sort of thing, basically because I was too sick. I don't mean that. But I thought, you know, I've sowed my wild oats and now I'm settled and all of that. But, I, you know, I'm an alcoholic, and the day came again when I started to drink again. And, you know, I could look back now and say I blamed it on, you know, the babysitter or the nanny that I had at the time who egged me on. But I think, you know, I can, like I said, I find people that can drink with me wherever I am, even in my own home. And I was back on the thing again. And, you know, I also suffer with a lot of depression. That's part of my disease of alcoholism. I mention that because it is a symptom of the disease of alcoholism. Not everybody who has alcoholism suffers with depression, but I say that because I then got caught up in, not in the mental health system, but within my the medical profession, in terms of my doctor, and I went to a psychiatrist, you know, because I was depressed and I was suicidal and all this sort of thing, and this was all part of my disease. And so I got medicated with some different things to try and help that, which actually just made my drinking just worse. All I wanted to do was drink. You know, I'd take all these drugs, antidepressants, whatever, but all I wanted to do once, all I wanted to do when I got up in the morning was I wanted to drink, and I had these little kids that I'm meant to be in charge of. And so you can imagine that my life became quite unmanageable quite quickly. At times I would be drunk, lying out on the lawn at 10 o'clock in the morning, and who's looking after the kids? You know, and I had little kids. And, you know, driving the car around drunk all the time. But at the end of my drinking, I was just a top-up, everyday drinker. And so if I was taking them to school in the morning, I certainly would have been over the limit. And yet, you know, that was what I was doing. So, fortunately for me, it all came unstuck quite quickly. I didn't carry on. I got to a point within my own self, so it wasn't an event that happened, it was just one day, same old, got all the booze into the house that I was going to drink that day, and I drank everything. I think it was 3 bottles of wine. By this stage, I'd stopped, it was all I was drinking was bottled wine. I had stopped buying cask wine because I would drink the whole cask. I had stopped spirits a long time before because they were far too unpredictable. and I drank all the wine, and I passed out in my 2-year-old's bed, and my husband came home and said, I've had enough of this, and I had enough myself. And through a series of events, ended up in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting a couple of nights later, and the rest is history. And I'm so grateful for that. I didn't, you know, there's so many things that I could still have as a yet. You know, driving that car, by God, or whichever car, all the cars that I had, every car I owned, ever, I have driven drunk. I should have had drunk driving convictions. I don't have one, single one to my name. So, you know, I've got a lot of yets. I had never been breathalyzed until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and now I regularly get breathalyzed because I'm often out, you know, in the evenings at AA meetings, and on the way home from AA meetings, they'll stop me and, have you had a drink tonight? You know, and I kind of chuckle. But, you know, I'm so grateful. And I take the message of recovery into the drug treatment unit in Arahata Prison. And I see a lot of, over the probably decade or so I've been doing that, I see a lot of me's in there. A lot of them are in there for drugs, but also they all have alcoholism. And they've, you know, I've seen the odd one in there that I just think, oh my God, that could, but by the grace of God, be me. So today I have a different life, I'm able to work. I've just got a new job, actually, which, you know, that's really, those sort of things are really important to me. You know, I have good relations with my family. I've been able to raise those children. They've all left home now, my 3 daughters. They've been raised by a sober, recovering alcoholic woman. My marriage didn't last, but, you know, I have a good relationship with the father of those 3 girls. I do the right thing, and I don't behave like an asshole anymore. You know, I can just behave, and I can turn up when I say, well, I'm going to do something. I can be there, and I can be, you know, responsible. People can trust me. Yeah, so that's probably enough from me, and I've got some lovely other people here that want to share too with you. So if you think that you relate to anything that I have said, by all means, you know, give us a look, come along to a meeting, call the 0800 number, you know, just come along and just check us out, because it's certainly been the one thing that has helped with me. And you know, I no longer want to drink, I no longer want to, I don't have to take medication, I don't have depression anymore. I have bad days, but it doesn't last like it used to for months. And, you know, and if things don't go my way, well, I think, oh, well, okay, God might have a better plan. So I have a completely different outlook on life. So I'll wrap it up there. Thank you for listening.
Thanks, Liz. You're listening to Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM, and this is Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. So one of the things that Liz mentioned was the 0800 number. Now, the 0800 number for Alcoholics Anonymous is 0800-229-6757. That's a free phone number, obviously. And so that number will be answered by a sober alcoholic who's been sober a little while and who can give you information about Alcoholics Anonymous or just answer some questions about your drinking. Or, even more importantly, point you in the direction of an AA meeting in your area. So that's a nationwide number, 0800-229-6757. That's nationwide in New Zealand and most areas of the country that will be 24/7 as well. So, you know, if you don't ring during business hours, it's fine. Someone will still be there to answer. So there's also the AA website, which is 24/7 as well, aa.org.nz. There's lots of really good information on that website. There's a list of meetings nationally in New Zealand, so you can listen to, you can look for meetings in your area any day of the week in any area of the country. And also, there are downloads of these meetings on air as well. So from that website, aa.org.nz, you hover over the meetings drop down and then go to meetings on air. Click on that, it'll come up with a big list of listenable, downloadable meetings on air. So you can keep going with this. If you're listening live, that's great. Or if you're listening on a podcast, brilliant. If you want more of them, then that's where you go, aa.org.nz, meetings, and then meetings on air. Awesome. All right. Well, let's carry on with the sharing now. So Tristan, you're up to share.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Liz. I'm Tristan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tristan.
Yeah, I'm really grateful that there is all that those resources out there that I can use when I get in trouble, because I know that my alcoholism has to be kind of dealt with daily. It's kind of it's my desire to drink has left me, but my alcoholism is kind of there lurking, and I've got a program now that helps me with that. For a long time I kind of didn't know what was wrong with me. I had like a lot of fear and a lot of I just felt like I didn't quite understand my place in the world, and I found that when I drank it, you know, I just knew that who I was, and I knew where I was going, and I knew what I was doing, and it was kind of like a magic potion that could give me that just reminded me who I was. And and for the first time, all those kind of sort of suicidal thoughts that I'd had since I was a teenager kind of left me. And I thought, you know, I'm on my way. This is going to be me. And kind of that's when the denial kicked in, because right from the very start, while I was having all these kind of insights into who I was and you know, how great drinking was, it was causing a lot of kind of trouble for me. Like Liz said, my very first party that I really tried to get drunk at, my parents got called by 8 p.m. And had to come and pick me up. And I don't remember any of it. And it kind of didn't get better from there. And I sort of stumbled on. I tried to figure out better ways to drink. I tried to, I too didn't like stayed away from harder liquor, because like that was, I just couldn't work the day after. I'd buy a bottle of vodka or a bottle of ouzo, and I just wouldn't be able to get out of bed. At the time, I was working in a bakery, and I just wouldn't be able to get there. So I'd drink beer instead, and I tried all those kind of techniques to try and get around it. And I knew right from the beginning that I was stuffed. Like I knew that I had a problem with drinking, but it was also my best friend. It helped me with everything else, and I just could not kind of get real enough with myself to kind of admit that that all the problems in my life were kind of, most of them were coming from the fact that I drank and I couldn't stop drinking. And so when I came into AA, I'd kind of tried everything. I tried moderating. So the idea that it was the first drink that got me wasn't really kind of a new idea for me. It was sort of, it was pretty self-evident by that time that as soon as I drank, I couldn't stop. By the time I came into AA, I was sort of living on a couch, drinking 24/7. When I wasn't sleeping, I was drinking, hiding out in kind of public toilets to drink, and basically just sort of skulking my way through my life and trying to kind of, I was kind of in a pattern of avoiding everything and kind of avoiding the damage that alcohol was having both on my health and on the kind of my social life, like on my family, on my my friends. And my solution to that wasn't to stop drinking. My solution to that was just don't go out. So I just stayed in my garage, hid out there, and when the sun went down, I'd walk down to the bottle store and just buy the most horrid, high percentage kind of beer that I could get. Because I'd even started cheating on my only beer thing. I'd get the RTDs that were 15% and stuff like that. And so when I came into AA, I kind of knew that I didn't really have much of a hope without stopping drinking. And so now I know that. All I need to do on a daily basis is stay away from that first drink, and I can do that with the help of the program of AA. So, yeah, I'm very grateful. Thanks.
Thanks, Tristan. This is Wellington Access Radio, 106.1 FM, Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. So we've got people live in the studio today sharing about their alcoholism and their journey. So also listening, there's people from all around the world as well, because this this gets broadcast and podcast throughout the planet, which is pretty cool, not just in New Zealand. And every so often, because we've got a Facebook page, it's called AA on Air Wellington. Every so often we get a message from someone who's been listening, and so I'll read one out. It's from Brenda P. So she says, "Love attending," and she's put it in quotation marks, "love attending your meetings. I've 28 years of sobriety, but with neurological problems that keep me from driving, I can stay connected on my stay-at-home days by listening to you. Thank you all so much. B in Loveland, Colorado, USA." So that's really nice, and thank you, Brenda, for that message, and we did reply to it. So, yeah, it's really cool. You know, it's nice to know that we're carrying the message, you know, sort of far and wide, further than just Wellington. You know, so it's really cool. So, let's get on with the sharing now. So, Nell, would you like to share?
Sure, thank you, Dan. Hi, I'm Nell. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Nell.
Sorry, I was late. Didn't realise I'd actually even achieved being late for a meeting, but anyway.
No one knows you were late now.
Oh, okay. it's so good to be here, and thanks for your sharing. It's lovely to attend this meeting, and yes, it's very wonderful to hear of people, you know, joining us from all over the world. It's, yeah, what a fantastic facility. Oh, thank you. Just move the microphone. I've really appreciated hearing the sharing of you guys today. Thank you. It got me to thinking about my own sort of drinking origins, which I sort of don't think about hugely now, but just stuff that I've heard and sort of related to. It is crazy how something that seems to be so poisonous, you just sort of keep on doing and think that's, you know, like you'll just get better at it. And that's what I thought. Because I was always a huge vomiter, and I just thought, oh, well, one day I'm going to grow out of this vomiting. It never occurred to me to not drink. I just saw that as a bit of as a slight weakness. People used to joke, oh, there's Nellie, as I was known then. She's driving the big white bus again, and because no one else that I really hung out with that had such a problem with being sick, but I think just my system couldn't take it. And the very first time I actually got drunk, I was about 14, and I wasn't sick, but I did do a very bizarre thing, which was to give a guy that I had only just met a blowjob, and on a stop bank in Canterbury, and that just wasn't really. I mean, I went to a girls' school. I didn't have much opportunity to hang out with boys, but we sort of went from a handshake to that. And I didn't have much opportunity to drink. I mean, she was quite crafty. I wasn't. I actually didn't know how to do crafty things, and I was afraid of getting caught. I was really I didn't want to get into anyone's bad books. So my drinking was sort of sporadic. I think the next time I got really drunk, I was sick, and that was at a cast party for a production that I was in with the brother school of my school, and I was really ill, and I remember my parents didn't get phoned. Actually, the mother of that person who was hosting the party, she got all my clothes, she put me into bed, she took all my clothes, she washed them, and she dried them, and so I went back home all sort of like fresh and clean. my mother would have had no idea what had transpired, and I started smoking then as well. But you know, I was too scared to go try and get someone to buy cigarettes for me. I used to get cigarette butts out of the gutter and smoke them. And when I had babysitting gigs, I would smoke the people's cigarettes out of the ashtray. So I remember my adolescence as sort of it was a strange time. But my drinking didn't really kick off until I left home at 18, and then I wasn't very well off then. So I just drank when I could, which was when we could have when we could all get money to get booze. And it never occurred to me that I had an issue with drinking. It never occurred to me that I was an alcoholic. My drinking sort of progressed, like, from being something that I only did with other people. And as you shared, Tristan, I had an extreme intolerance of spirits, but I loved gin and tonic, because my partner at the time, she'd schooled me in drinking gin and tonic, because I actually, I hated all alcohol when I first tried it. The only thing I could drink was something really sickly, like wine cooler. And then I was like onto these really sweet wines and spirits, just hideous beer. I couldn't take beer until sort of I was about 24. But I went through this period in my early 20s of hanging out with this guy who was a massive drinker, and he and my partner and I would get together on this weekend and we'd drink gin and tonic. And I remember just being so ill, and being like, we went to get fish and chips one day and they draped me over the bike rack outside the shop, because I actually was incapable of holding myself upright, and I was just so ill. It was like, I was toxic. I was toxicated, even though that's not a word. So my drinking progressed from being like a social thing to something that I was actually quite happy doing on my own too. And when I moved to Auckland when I was about 24, 25, and that's where I began to really enjoy drinking on my own and having parties by myself on Friday night and listening to music. And my then partner was a shift worker, so he wasn't around. And I loved it, just loved it. I went to London, and my drinking ramped up massively there. I was hanging out with people who were huge drinkers. I got involved with this guy who was just, had an ability to consume that I, hadn't witnessed. And he became the father of my child. When we moved in together, I was really horrified at the fact that he could come home drunk when we were meant to be having a nice dinner together. And I said, well, this can't carry on. I'm out of here if you carry on doing this. But no, actually, I just drank more so that I could cope. So by the time I had our daughter, it was really hard to be pregnant in that environment. And I did actually drink, too much for a pregnant person, but thankfully Grace doesn't seem to have been overly harmed by it. But I did. I stopped drinking and I gave up smoking and as much as I could. And it was just terrible. So when Grace was about 8 months old, I was so relieved to give up breastfeeding, because then I could start drinking again. Mm-hmm. And I was on antidepressants at the time too, and I just could drink masses, but unfortunately I couldn't stay awake. So every night I would fall asleep in the living room. And I remember once my stepson, who was just a lad, woke me up one night by throwing a glass of water in my face. And it never occurred to me that actually was something really wrong with me being, like, stepmother with a baby, actually passing out in the living room. I mean, I was really angry that he did that. I never thought that I might have an issue with alcohol until my late 20s, or maybe even early 30s, when I was still in the UK, and I thought, right, I think I'm going to try and have a night without alcohol. I actually couldn't sort of concentrate on stuff. As you've shared, as I was at home with my daughter too, I was just like bored out of my brick. I tried drinking in the morning. I tried drinking when I did the ironing. It was terrible. I just felt sick and woozy, and then I had to go and pick her up from the nursery. I was too scared to drink and drive. I only probably did it a couple of times. Once I did get caught, but the guy let me off. I just hung out till the end of the day when the hand of the clock went to, well, it was 6 originally, and then it became 5, by the end of my drinking it was 4:30. It was great. I tried to have a night, I had a night without alcohol, I remember that, just before I came back to New Zealand, and I was like, that's a major achievement, having a night without drinking. So anyway, skipping forward, don't know how much time we've got, but don't want to over-talk. To my late 30s, where I'd had another child, and I'd actually had 3 years of not drinking, not going to AA. Went a couple of times, thought it was totally weird and didn't go back. I had got to a really bleak place, and I had two children and a partner, different partner, different father of the second child, and I was doing really random things, doing stuff that, you know, people do when they're younger, like going to town and picking up strange men, you know, which you generally wouldn't do when you've got a partner anyway. And I just happened to be talking about my drinking with my therapist, and he said, well, how about giving AA a go? Because, you know, a therapist mate of mine tried it, and he's found it really good, and he's been sober for a while. Yeah, and that's when it kind of clicked, that, and he took me through the DM4, that diagnostic thing that they use to check if you've got a dependency, and I, like, checked all the categories. So, yeah, so that's when I came to AA, which is, well, it'll be 10 years in October, one day at a time, by the grace of God. And what a life. What a life I have today. Boy, I'm so glad that I had that conversation with him, you know, that we actually talked honestly about my drinking, because I'm living the dream. I'm just living the dream. And actually, I have been since I got sober. You know, like, some really good stuff happened just in the recent past, and is happening in the present. But really good stuff has happened since I got sober, and mainly it's been an internal feeling of ease and comfort and serenity and ability to sort of accept life on life's terms and be grateful for the small good things. That's been the major change. My sobriety is so precious to me. There's nothing more precious. I mean, my two girls, obviously, you know, I love them to pieces, but I can't be a good mother to them if I'm not sober. And even though I haven't been the perfect mother, I do wish that I'd got sober earlier in my older girl's life. You know, I've been a sober mother for a few years now, both of their lives, most of the younger girl's life, and with whatever issues arise from now, like, you know, there's been quite a few in my older girl's adolescence, and there'll no doubt be issues in my younger girl's adolescence, which is just around the corner. I'm sober. I trust that I'll be sober and equipped to deal with it. So I just want to share a little bit of good news. Like, I heard about the promises. Well, you know, I've always heard about them, and I've always thought they were great. But I really feel like the promises are really coming true for me. And it kind of makes me a bit nervous, like something bad's going to happen. But, I'm just loving the situation that I'm in with my work. It's just fantastic. I love my job and I love the people that I work with. You know, I want to tell them that I love them because I feel so fond of them and so happy to be at work. Like, I've always been a great champion of, mental health days. I've had a few of them in sobriety, and also working from home, you know, like a day a fortnight or something. And I actually told my manager, I don't need to work from home because I actually I want to be at work. I don't need to escape the toxicity of the work environment because it actually isn't toxic. It's just wonderful. I had a major, I've been a bit sad over the past couple of years. The relationship that I was in was really testing, and It finished for the I don't know 10th, 15th time, but it finally finished last year. Thank goodness. But you know, I'm grateful for it and for having had it. And I just never occurred to me that that I would like meet someone else, and that I could meet someone that was really amazing and sort of easy. But that relationships could be easy. I just thought relationships were hard work. It's hard work and the sad. And you have to read self-help books, and you have to go to therapy, and you're not really going to get what you want or your needs met, but, you know, you'll just get something, and that'll be enough. And that, I met someone at the convention and at the convention of all places. Seems a bit cliche, but it's turning out to be such an amazing thing, and like this is the best relationship I've ever experienced. I mean, it's only 4 weeks old, but you know, I've had a few relationships, and I've been in relationships for 4 weeks, and I've thought, holy shit, what is going on here? This is tough, and should I be doing this? And then I've just pressed on anyway, against all the red flags. And, you know, there are no red flags. It's just, and he's only talking. He's only talking and being honest and direct and having a shared faith, you know, having a faith in a higher power, both having that and having a program. Yeah, so I just feel like I'm having a bit of a pink cloud in my 10th year of sobriety. So I just wanted to share that because, yeah, really good shit happens, you know, when you get sober. And obviously you don't have to wait 10 years for it. Like, really good shit was happening to me when I was sober earlier. Oh, it just occurred to me, I might not, possibly shouldn't be swearing on the radio. Okay. Yeah, so I'm really happy to be here, and I was really glad that Liz asked me to come along to this meeting, because I was actually here 4 weeks ago when it was the convention, and if you'd asked me that day, like, do you think that in a month's time you'll be sitting in another on-air meeting wearing your new lover's sweatshirt? Like, I would have just said, pardon? So, yeah, it's really great to be here with you guys. Thank you.
Thanks, Nell. Okay, this is Wellington Access Radio, 106.1 FM. This is Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. So we've been blessed today by having bulls and bears in here to share their experience, strength and hope. And there was some mention of the promises. So what I might do, just towards the end of the meeting, is I'll read the AA promises. Now, this is from the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book. The book's called Alcoholics Anonymous, but we call it the Big Book. And it's a bit of a guide, you know, for Alcoholics Anonymous, really. So from page 83, it's from a chapter called Interaction. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. But feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. So that was a reading from Alcoholics Anonymous, page 83 and 84. I'll share for about 2 minutes. So I'm Dan, I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everyone. So, I mean, I love coming to meetings. I love coming to this meeting. And I love hearing about the promises, because the promises are starting to come true in my life as well. And some of them have come true and continue to be true. And I think about, you know, what alcohol did for me, because alcohol did a lot for me, you know. Alcohol gave me the keys to open some doors, and you know, and some of those doors were pretty fun, you know. It's like a lot of my drinking wasn't bad at all, but it was bad enough to get in here into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, because you know, I had those two things. I had the mental obsession, and I had the physical allergy, the physical craving, that meant when once I started drinking, I didn't know when to stop, and you know, I stopped when the alcohol was finished with me, not when I was finished with it. And and that's changed now, because you know, I started coming to meetings, and I started to keep coming back, and I listened to what people had done, got a sponsor, started working the steps, and as a result of doing those things, you know, I've been sober for, you know, a few years now, and I've got a different life. It's not like, you know, the same old life that I had, just a little bit better. It's I can draw a line in the sand of my life and say, this is the first part, the first half, and this is the second half. This is the second half of my life. And now, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And being sober has opened up the keys to life. And, you know, I was always searching for randomness and excitement. And I get that in sobriety more than I ever did with alcohol. And it's much better because you can remember it all. So I'll leave it there. And thanks for everyone for coming in. So if we'd like to join me together and we'll end with a serenity prayer, that'd be great. So, God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
That program was brought to you by Ones and Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Thanks, New Zealand On Air, for funding the Access Internet Radio Project.